Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. And on today's episode of The Health Fix, I have Dr. David Shirazi on. He is a TMJ and sleep expert who speaks across the country, has some amazing talks on Google that have great, great subjects. So you got to check those guys out. And he's got a podcast, The Bite, The Breathe, and Balance podcast that's coming up. So you got to check that out too. He has all kinds of experience and he's got it with children and with adults. So that's a fun one since we don't get a lot of folks on the podcast talking about expertise with children. So this is going to be a fun podcast. Plus, my favorite thing, he is an acupuncturist just like me. So we get to talk all about how you can integrate acupuncture into your world. If you have some sleep stuff going on, you have any TMJ, and we're also going to talk sinuses today. So Dr. Shirazi, welcome to the Health Fix.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I don't think I've ever been interviewed by an acupuncturist before. That's so awesome.
Well, today we are going to geek out a little bit because I, of course, when I saw that you wanted to come on the Health Fix, I was like, okay, great. I've got somebody who can kind of back up some of the things I say to folks, especially about what's going on in the jaw, what's going on in the sinuses, and how it affects really the whole body, essentially, since we're talking central nervous system here with the jaw. We're talking about so many implications further down the line. So give us a little background on how the heck did you get started in working with TMJ and sleep medicine in particular?
Oh, it's one of those things where the profession chose me rather than I choosing it. I came out of dental school, immediately started Oriental Medical School. And then in the meantime, I was doing orthodontics in my practice. And I was, you know, helping these kids. Because we now know, I didn't know back then, but we now know that the way to cure sleep apnea in children, we can't use the word cure very often, but this is one of those times we can, is with what's called functional orthodontics in children, where you can like expand the palate, bring the jaw forward, and et cetera. It works even if they have enlarged tonsils and adenoids. It works even in obese kids. It's one of the rare times it outperforms the CPAP. Wow. So we were doing it and, you know, the mom is like, you know, he's just doing great in school. He doesn't define me anymore. He's just an overall happier kid. So then they're like, okay, we'll fix me. I'm like, okay. So then I started working on the parents. And right around the time we got into the clinic in, you know, TCM school. And it was great. I got to apply the acupuncture with the appliances and the lasers I was using, and I was getting really good results. And I love dentistry. I think it's really awesome. I wanted to be a dentist my whole life. But I enjoy doing this TMJ and sleep and ortho stuff so much more, especially when I combined it with the acupuncture, because it just took it to the next level.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, a lot of folks talk about, you know, we say the word TMJ and a lot of people kind of know what that means. It has something to do with our temporomandibular joint here, but a lot of folks don't really understand what kind of serious implications having TMJ can have on your, not only your dental health, but your overall physiologic health. Would you speak a little bit to what folks might be experiencing with TMJ and how it kind of impacts their entire life?
Yeah, it's a very good point you bring up, because we sometimes and often feel the symptoms of a TMJ disorder more than the TMJ disorder. Yes. Right. And the reason being is we have a mechanism in our brain that if there's redundant, useless information, we don't focus on it, right? In the prefrontal cortex. So when you walk into a room that smells badly, after about 5 minutes, you don't smell it anymore. Right. Doesn't mean the molecules of odor are not in the room anymore. It just means you're no longer conscious of it. And it's actually hard to actually think about it. It's actually hard to go back to it. Right. Mm-hmm. With the TMJ, we swallow 2,000 to 3,000 times a day. We talk, we chew food, and then we clench our teeth at night. Right. Mm-hmm. So that would be an inordinate amount of information for the brain to process if there was a problem with it, right? Because every time we swallow, our teeth come together. And, you know, if there's a problem, if there's a capsulitis, meaning an inflammation of the TMJ capsule, or behind the jaw, if the plexus of nerves and arteries are being compressed every time we swallow, it's just redundant information, right? But tension type headaches, I would say the majority of the time are related to people clenching their teeth. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, when you go to a chiropractor, it feels great. You get an adjusted, or you see an acupuncturist. Mm-hmm. You get the needling. It feels great. It goes away, or it's greatly reduced. But then you clench your teeth, and it comes back, right? Yeah. So if you then combine the appliances that shut off your ability to clench 50 to 100%, and then you do the acupuncture, then you're actually going to get resolution, right? Now, disorders like migraine and trigeminal neuralgia are what's called centrally sensitized disorders. Have you ever heard of this before?
I have, but I'm guessing that a lot of folks have not listening to the podcast. Good.
I'm impressed that you were. That's a great thing. So centrally sensitized disorders. So we have basically referred pain and centrally sensitized pain, right? So referral pain is you have a pain in your neck and it refers down your arm. Yeah. Central sensitization is that neck pain triggers usually the trigeminal nucleus into going into a state. It actually goes through physical changes that causes other parts of your body to either hurt or have a problem, even though there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah. Right. So a migraine, you know, we call it a trigeminal vascular disorder where the blood vessels open and shut inordinately. The blood vessels don't have a mind of their own, right? Like a nerve has to tell them what to do,
right?
And, you know, it's very challenging to call these problems genetic when people don't have it for most of their lives, but then they get it at the age of 32, or they get it right before their period. You know, it's like you can't just willy-nilly call it genetic. What we can say is genetic is if someone gets a centrally sensitized disorder later in life, their genetic predisposition, meaning the basic hardware of their brain, will lean towards a migraine, a trigeminal neuralgia, what have you. Yeah. Burning mouth syndrome, whatever you want to call it. So a TMJ disorder can lead to a centrally sensitized trigeminal disorder. Right. And there's plenty of evidence for this, right? The money isn't there for very large published, you know, double blind placebo randomized studies. But there is enough collection of anecdotal and case studies and even group studies to support that it's definitely like correlated.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible how, and this is kind of how I look at it in my office. One thing kind of leads to another, and you'll feel like, oh my gosh, I'm going crazy. What's going on? Mm-hmm. All of these things are compounding. And so, yes, being on the side of an acupuncturist, I'm doing the needles and we're working on trying to relax the nervous system and the stress components and that go along with this. But having the oral appliances is usually, you know, I'll be like, okay, have you seen a dental specialist in this case? You know, have we worked with someone? And a lot of folks will ask me, well, doc, are they just going to give me a retainer? Are they going to give me just something, you know, like that terrible thing I had in my mouth when I was a kid that we had to put the little key in and turn it to expand my palate? What exactly is going to happen? Because I think a lot of people are like, okay, the TMJ is bad enough. Now, yeah. What else do I have to do? Right. So will you enlighten us a little bit in terms of what it looks like?
I have to say the person that said that, like, oh, am I going to get a retainer or am I going to get a night guard, is actually, you know, it's kind of like justified skepticism, right? Because the purpose of a night guard is to protect the teeth and the dental work. That's the purpose of it. We're finding now that because roughly 50% of the time, a form of sleep apnea can cause clenching of the teeth, we're finding that night guards, roughly half the time, will make the apnea worse and make the clenching harder.
Interesting.
And then you're also clenching in an unusual position, right? Because most night guards are made very arbitrarily, right? The dental assistant takes the mold. They send it off to the lab. The lab just kind of eyeballs it and says, okay, there is about right. And then just makes a night guard to there. And then, you know, when you sleep, if you sleep on your back, your jaw falls back, right? You sleep on your side, your jaw slides to those sides. So you're never holding the corrected jaw position anyway. So in my office, you know, when we take impressions, we take a jaw position and we take a CT scan to confirm that's the right jaw position I want them in. The jaw will naturally, with the appliance, go to that position, no matter if they're on their back or on their sides, right? But they're not locked in, right? Those are all very critical things for me. And of course, if they actually do have a sleep disorder breathing problem, well, we want to go ahead and see if we can resolve that with appliances, if CPAP is not their first choice.
Yeah, I think CPAP, I hear in my over and over again, many people are like, the CPAP just doesn't work for me. It's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. And a lot of folks will reach out and say, hey, doc, is there something else? Is there something else I can do? What would be your answer to someone that has maybe a mild to moderate or even a moderate to severe sleep apnea and the CPAP's just not doing the trick for them?
Right. So just so you know what the literature says on the subject, literature is pretty solid on this, that CPAP works something like 99.7% of the time, but it's tolerated way less than half the time. That's the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And there's various issues, right? You get dry mouth, it leaks, it makes a noise because it's basically an air compressor, right? Mm-hmm. The bed partner doesn't like it. They're worried about social stigma. There's a lot of, traveling with it. You know, there's a lot of reasons people have to not like it, right? But if they ever did, you know, get to overcome those, it does work. It does technically work. My joke in my lectures about a CPAP or oral appliance is ointment or a suppository. You know, it's like a suppository works pretty good. You know, it's pretty effective. It's internally ingested. And an ointment doesn't work as well as a suppository, right? But it's so much easier to apply an ointment on your skin than to apply a suppository, right? The problem is the application, right? So yeah, there are many alternatives now to CPAP. One of them, of course, number one alternative is oral appliance therapy, which is one of the things I focus on. But if you have a very, very mild state of apnea, getting what's called myofunctional therapy can be very helpful. That's where you train your tongue on where to swallow. There are studies out of Australia that show that using a didgeridoo, you know, that little tree bark, it's the circular breathing part of it. We believe because you have to tone up, because basically you're keeping air in your cheeks, blowing it into it you're exhaling while you're inhaling with your nose, right? And you have this circular breath happening this whole time. So there's a lot of, like, you know, muscle toning that goes on when you're doing something like that, and it tones and firms up your airway. Right? It just works. But, you know, it is, I've tried it. It's very challenging to learn. Did you do? I need a teacher. But myofunctional therapists, you know, they're great. They're abundant. They'll work on Zoom calls and they can, like, train you on how to, you know, use your muscles and to get proper exercises of the muscles up your pharyngeal nerve muscles.
Interesting. I actually hadn't heard of that. At all.
Myofunctional therapy?
Yeah, I had not. Yeah. So this is new for me. And so this is exciting to know that there is something like that available. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you're in LA and in the LA area, you have two offices, one in Conejo and then the other is in LA. Do you have someone that does the myofunctional training?
Oh my God, we're spoiled for choice. We're spoiled for choice. I mean, I have a few that I love that I work with. I sent my assistant to get training on it.
Nice.
But we, you know, we do it in-house and we also refer out when they need a lot more hand-holding. we refer out for that.
Very cool.
Because we're so blessed to have so many myofunctional therapists around.
That is good to know. That's golden for me here. And hopefully you guys who are listening, you know, I'm going to put the notes in drjkrausnd.com, but make sure that, you know, you kind of think about that there. Now, you do some research in your office, correct? Is that what I saw?
Yeah, I actually have a sleep lab that is focused on research, but I've been associated with other either case studies or multi-center studies, mostly associated with pain.
Gotcha. Let's talk a little bit about pain and how it affects sleep and how it affects airways. And give us a little, you know, because there are multiple different types of pains. Of course, we talked about the jaw pain, but I'm guessing that you've looked at other types of pain as well.
I mean, my focus in my practice is like pain from the neck up, right? So ear pain, neck pain, facial pain, you know, oral apparatus pain is my focus. Yeah.
Gotcha. So if we're talking about pain, you know, I've had a lot of patients come in with pain that's kind of behind the jaw, not really TMJ. Mm-hmm. It's more kind of ear peri, you know, auricular kind of pain.
Yeah. Gallbladder meridian. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what have you found with some of your sleep studies or some of your studies in relation to pain around the gallbladder meridian and in this area? What's been really effective and what might be able to help folks if someone's struggling with that?
So the gallbladder meridian passes through the TMJ. So that's an important point. And when I have my patients in appliances, if they have that kind of referred pattern, then I'll do, have you heard of Korean four needle technique, Saam? Yeah. I'll use that typically. And that's very, very helpful. I find I'll sometimes combine it with some master dung points, which work really well. But this is what the literature is showing and leaning towards. It's still a relatively new specialty, if you will, sleep apnea with oral appliances, TMJ with oral appliances. Like, it's been around, but the research isn't as abundant as, let's say, cancer research or diabetes research or, you know, asthma research. It's still, you know, we're still trying to collect the right data. And unfortunately, the industry is kind of revolves around money. So usually the money that's being funneled into something is because they're trying to get something sold at the end of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, acupuncture, there isn't really any, it's not like if a bunch of acupuncturists are funneling their money together to get a study going. It's just sort of like, you just got to hope the NIH takes them on or someone decides to, you know, publish a case study that they found very interesting. But what we know is sleep apnea gets worse with age because it's predominantly a neuromuscular tone problem, right? You don't have enough tone in the upper pharyngeal muscles and the airway collapses, right? And so that becomes a problem of airway because you just can't breathe. You can't sustain your airway patency. And we're also finding that, like I said before, 50% of the time, roughly, we clench because of an airway disturbance, right? So the reason my office, and there's over 65 centers throughout the world that are like mine called TMJ and Sleep Therapy Center.
That we're
like-minded, that we're going to approach the patient in a similar fashion. And I should say, one of our centers in Sydney, Australia, just became an acupuncturist like me.
Nice. So I'm
very, very happy and very proud of Dr. Chan for that. But so essentially what we're finding, so in an overnight sleep study, where we're measuring all these things happening at the same time, your brain waves, your muscle activity, your airflow, your snoring, what we find is the airflow will start to decrease and go down, and then the masseter activities will pick up and people will start to clench. And then when the airway picks up, then the masseters just stop, right? Now, the other half the time, we don't find any, we see the person clenching without any airway flow restriction. So we always use the general word stress, right? But essentially, any kind of autonomic nervous system imbalance will cause you to clench. That's just the, that's just, there's no way around it.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at with that. And then of course, you know, excessive clenching will lead to a TMJ disorder, even with an eye guard. Right. And putting any piece of plastic in your mouth at night, anything in your mouth, whether it's Invisalign, whether it's a night guard, whether it's whatever, will have an impact on the airway. It won't be neutral. It'll either be beneficial or it'll be detrimental, but it won't be neutral.
Interesting. And from one insertion, or does it build over time and have the ability? Because I'm thinking about folks that have Invisalign, no issues whatsoever with any sleep apnea. I'm going, is it setting them up for this?
No, I wouldn't say it's setting them up for it. Okay. But if for example, everyone's got some degree of sleep apnea, right? So for adults, it's considered within normal limits. If you have 5 events per hour, right? In children, 5 events could be severe, but in adults, it's 5 is considered within normal limits. So if you had 2 before on average, and you put on an Invisalign tray or any appliance, and you went up to 3, or 3.5, or 4, even doubled to 4, it's that there's very little impact in the adult male population, at least. In the female population, we do see more of an impact, right? I should say females in the childbearing age, right? Females past menopause present as their adult male cohorts.
Interesting. Interesting. So there's some estrogenic component.
Well, the thing is, estrogen sensitizes pain. This is an absolute, people get upset when I say this in my lectures, and I didn't discover this. I didn't do the studies on this. It's been repeated all over the world. But the more estrogen you have, the more sensitive you are to pain. Okay. And, you know, there is kind of a colloquial term that women can handle pain better than men. Right. So this is how it presents clinically. So let's say, like, on a scale, let's say, you know, you give, let's say I'm exaggerating for effect. Let's say this is a female of childbearing age pain threshold. And let's say that is a male's, right? So let's say she, you know, you introduce pain. Yeah, I can tolerate it. Oh, I really feel it now. Right. And then you keep adding. Then you keep, you just keep going. Right. Then they're tolerating the pain. Right. Now, let's say by exaggeration, a male's pain threshold is like this high. Right. Same thing. You add on the pain. You add on the pain. No complaints. No complaints. They're walking around with a limp, but no complaints. No complaints. And then they finally break their threshold and we're big babies. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we've gone from what appears to us from 0 to DEFCON 1. you follow?
Yes.
So at least on a case by case basis, men have a higher pain threshold than women. And I should say it's more hormonal. So like a female with more testosterone will tolerate a male cohort that has more estrogen than she does. You follow? So it is very hormonally mediated. Right. And that goes also for sleep. So the part about sleep that is horrible, it's not the lack of oxygen. The sleep disturbance part that's the worst part is what's called an arousal, which means you're either in delta or REM and you get kicked out of that stage into a lighter stage of sleep. Okay. So women of childbearing age are more sensitive to, one, the arousal, and two, to how many arousals they have. That makes sense?
Interesting. Yeah, I'm wondering if it has, like, physiologically to do with being in childbearing age, if it's to be awake to care for kids.
For sure, there's a vigilance factor. For sure. That's why I went through a radio wave. That's what I mean by airwaves, a radio wave and like XM satellite radio campaign talking about secondhand snoring, where they did a study out of the Cleveland Clinic where they started off with like 1,100 subjects, and they tested the husband and the wife in bed together. And they found that for the bed partner with sleep apnea, they had 27 arousals at night per hour. And the bed partner that didn't have apnea had 21 arousals an hour.
Right? Interesting.
So of those 1,100 subjects, they whittled it down to 150 people that stuck with the CPAP, right? And they didn't do sleep studies on the bed partners, but they questioned the bed partners and said, so how are you doing now that your bed partner is wearing a CPAP? And they're like, wonderful. My mood is better. I don't get headaches. My children say I'm much more agreeable. You know, we see the impact. There is a secondary effect. And the effect can be even from a noisy neighbor's dog. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, having those. And now we have things, you know, I'm sporting my Aura Ring thing here. We have these things that can tell us when we're having these multiple arousals in the evening. Have you found the technology and the wearables to be useful in your practice, or have you found them to be annoying, inconsistent? What's your take on? I'm curious.
Well, they range. So like a Fitbit is annoying because a Fitbit is basically useless. Okay. The Aura Ring is one of the better ones, but it's still very low specificity. It's not very precise. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Okay. Other than home sleep studies, I haven't found like a consumable device that's like consumer use of device that's like spot on accurate. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, that'll change in the future. So for example, when one of those companies decides to test their devices against a PSG, against an overnight sleep lab, yeah, then we'll probably get to a point where we'll be like, okay, one, because you can wear the overnight device while you're doing a PSG, right? A full overnight in-lab study. Mm-hmm. And you got like 20 sensors on the patient. Right. So what can happen is if you do proper studies of those two devices working simultaneously, you can essentially fact check your little Aura Ring or Fitbit or whatever product you're using into a reusable, reliable source. Right. I just haven't seen it yet. Just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I haven't seen it yet.
Sure, sure. No, it's a common question. And really for a lot of folks in my practice, you know, it's not required that folks have the wearables. I like it because sleep is something that I've struggled with for a long time. And so having something to give me a little wake up call, if you will, because I'll think I'm in bed, you know, 10:30 till 7 and I slept that whole time. And this will kind of tell me, well, maybe not. So it gives you a little bit of an idea, of course. But as we all know, we do need the formal studies in this case. Now, let's get back to talking a little bit more about airways again, because another big issue that I see quite commonly, especially living in the Pacific Northwest, is a lot of folks have inflammatory fungal kind of things going on. And I'd love to hear your take on impact of sinus and sinus issues, inflammation, allergies, whatever it may be, on breathing and sleep apnea in the, you know, overnight. How
is it's huge. It's absolutely huge. So being able to breathe through your nose is absolutely essential. Humans are designed to breathe through their nose and eat and speak with their mouth only, even during exercise. Right. It's very challenging when you're running at full tilt to breathe through your nose, but, with those rare exceptions aside, humans are exclusively to breathe through their nose. And when they can't, it causes a change in their oral posture. And in fact, if it happens on a growing child, it will cause what's called long face syndrome, right? Where their face is just very, very long and narrow, kind of like this. And that's because the muscles posture like that to mouth breathe, and it pulls the bones down with them.
Interesting.
Right. Interesting. So there are different ways. So someone that has what's called IgG food intolerances to food, you know, they get acid reflux, they have a reaction to dairy and wheat. You can get a blood test done and find out which foods to avoid because everyone's going to be different, right? The skin prick for that test, I find absolutely useless. I don't recommend it. For anaphylactic test, yeah, I think it's great. But for everyone, everything else for IgG, I don't find them useful. Of course, sinus infections. There's a nasal spray. Like I make a nasal spray with essential oils. Ooh. That seems to work really well. Of course, there's a slew of, you know, over-the-counter nasal sprays and prescription nasal sprays. Fungus becomes its own separate problem. So very few things work for fungus, but I've never seen anything work better than ozone therapy for fungal infection. So there is something that people do. They can, if they can find in your area, there is a very famous physician from Germany, Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, who's one of my teachers. And I was shocked. Like I hadn't talked to him in what, a decade. And he remembered me. I was so impressed by that. But he would do, for example, I imagine ozone therapy or refer out to someone that does ozone therapy.
Yes. Yes. There definitely is ozone therapy, here. And being a naturopath and an acupuncturist, you know, we've got lots of folks out there that are doing it as well. And, incredible stuff, incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. I like to hear stories of success with it because then it further helps us to bolster what possibilities folks have going forward with certain types of treatments. Yes. Now, with the sinuses, you mentioned you have your own essential oil. Can folks get a hold of that? You know,
just contact us and have us mail it to you. No big deal.
Yeah. What's in it? Tell us a little bit about it.
So what's it called? It's called True Functional Airway. Okay. And it's like peppermint, eucalyptus, frankincense, and a host of little piggyback, you know, what we would call like, you know, queen and servant herbs, you know, in the formula. And the water that I use is like, we filter everything out, even the fluoride. And then we add back in minerals, right? And we get calcium and magnesium in there. And we try to make it as salty as possible. Because it's you get to a very easy saturation of water and salt. But if you formulate the water itself, it'll hold on to salt better, which is what we want, because that's a big part of it. And it's very strong. And I've had patients that were, for lack of a better word, addicted to nasal steroids, meaning they're not chemically addicted. But as you know, with nasal steroids, it opens up your, you know, shrinks up your turbinates, open up your airway. And then about 3 to 4 hours later, it explodes them back up and you get a rebound. Yeah. Right. And if you do it at bedtime, you get, you know, woken up by that. Anecdotally, I've had 80% of my patients get off of that and just use my nasal spray when they can. Right? Very cool. And I have three versions. I have regular, half strength, what we call pedo, and eucalyptus free. Right. Cause some people, a good 10 to 20% of the population seem to have, a sensitivity to eucalyptus where they actually, their nose will swell up. With eucalyptus, right? With they can't tolerate it. Right? And often they'll know about it. They'll say, hey, does this have any eucalyptus in it? I was like, okay, I'll give you the eucalyptus free then.
Yes, I can imagine that would be not comfortable and counterproductive to the process. So when someone comes to your office and they're looking to consult, are you typically doing a multifactorial type of treatment? Meaning like they come in, you're doing a little counseling on what's going on, but you're also, will you give them a nasal spray and do acupuncture needles? I'm pointing to the points where I normally needle some of the sinus points, some of those points as well.
I've done it before. Yeah. It depends what they come in. I mean, oftentimes because I have a CT scan in my office, it's easy to see, okay, what is exactly wrong? That what is exactly going on? Where do we need to focus on? You know, I did a hospital residency in Korea. And in South Korea, the Kyunghide, the graduates, are both MDs and PhDs in Chinese medicine.
Very cool.
Yeah. So like when we ran through the stroke ward to do our residency through the stroke ward, I mean, the doctor would go on the computer, type in the MRI on the patient on the mainframe to see where the infarct was. When they saw where the infarct was, then they guided their acupuncture for that infarct.
Very cool.
Very cool. Very cool. So it really opens your eyes as to what is possible when you have an experience like that. And so here we get to, you know, combine the best of East and West. At least I try to try to get the best results we can.
Sure. I understand it's not always appropriate, but I think it's fun to kind of talk about how you could integrate it, because I think a lot of folks will think of, you know, as the medical model is, it's compartmentalized a little bit, and we're not thinking mm-hmm. of all the different things that we could roll into a certain situation.
I agree.
So I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, because it's called the Bite, Breathe, and Balance podcast. Yeah. And so what's your context with the bite, breathe, and balance? Are we talking dental? Are we talking breath? And then balance? Tell us about it a little bit so folks can understand what we're...
The part that binds all three together is the neurology, mm-hmm. right? So my mentor's mentor was a genius. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. He was an orthopedic surgeon. His name was John Beck. And he came up with this system called motor reflex testing. It kind of looks like a muscle test, mm-hmm. but it's a reflex test like a patellar tendon test, right? And unlike any other test, it can determine which orthopedic structure is affected and therefore what is the hierarchy. And that's never been done before, right? And this is particularly in the centrally sensitized patient. Mm. Right? Because, you know, we have a joke in chronic pain that acute pain, it hurts where the patients say it is, right? In chronic pain, it almost never hurts where the source of the pain is, mm-hmm. right? And that's what happened with John. Was he had, you know, he's got this workman's comp practice where he's helping people get out of pain, and patients are coming in, oh my God, this thing fell on my arm, right? And there's a video of it. And he'll take an MRI of it and they'll see the problem. But the patient had a much older injury that didn't get resolved, and the body won't fix this until that's fixed. So he was having like a 50% failure rate. So his background was in zoological and neonatal neurology, right? For fun, because he's just brilliant. And him and his partner came up with this motor reflex test that could determine where to go. And so my mentor, he had followed him. It's a very long story, that too. But he had followed him for a year and studied under, because he wasn't planning on teaching it to anybody. He would have gone to the grave if it wasn't for my mentor, Dr. Steve Omal. And he followed him, and he would say brilliant things all the time. Like in the same context that you would say, put the spoon in the, you know, the drawer that where the utensils go to, he would say profound things. And one time over lunch, while he was like wiping his face, he goes, as far as I can tell, the brain has prioritized bite, breathe, then balance. Right? And my mentor is like scribbling this down, writing this down. And for years, I was perplexed as to why our brains would prioritize the bite over breathing, right? Because you can go, what, 5 minutes without breathing, but you can go 40 days without eating. So I thought, well, you know, could it be, one of my best friends said, oh, it must be because the brain needs glucose and needs ketones and you need to eat and it prioritizes that, which is very plausible, but we have a mechanism called gluconeogenesis, where our body will just make glucose, right? Whether it's out of a muscle tissue or what, but it'll make it. So it was when I started to work with another specialist that pointed out that in her point of view, the purpose of biting every time we swallow, remember I said every time we swallow, we put our teeth together? The purpose of that is to let the brain know that the airway is clear to breathe. Right? So, and in that sequence, we put our teeth together and then we swallow with our tongue and we pass saliva, right? And we're now telling the brain, okay, this portion of the airway is good to go, right? And that precedes breathing by a fraction of a second, right? But the way neurology works is everything is what is happening right now. How do we survive to the next moment now, right? So that expression, so I had a study group called the Bite, Breathe, and Balance Study Group. You know, we would bring in chiropractors and osteopaths and naturopaths, and we just talked about how the whole body works together, right? The top half needs the bottom half and vice versa, right? So I hope that explains why we got to that bite, breathe, and balance. And, you know, with John, he was a orthopod, not a dentist, right? So he didn't know the difference between a bite and a TMJ problem. So for example, let's say a patient came to see him for that right, let's say median nerve pain, right? He would do the motor reflex test on him and he would find the left median nerve pain. And then he'd start focusing on this and the patient had zero complaints about the left median nerve, right? And he's like, doc, this is the side that, you know, is injured. He's like, yeah, whatever. And he would just focus and go through all the motions. And without asking permission, he would just take a pen and inject it and get it numb. And the patient's like, well, what are you doing? He's like, well, let's give it a minute. Let's see what happens. And then he'd wait a minute and he goes, okay, how is this side feeling? And they'd go, yeah, it doesn't hurt anymore. What'd you do? He's like, yeah, the pain is coming from this side, right? So the same thing, if someone tested as, let's say, a TMJ primary, he would like inject them with light local anesthetic into the jaw joints, right? And we would have to tell him like, no, John, just take a stick, put it between the teeth, and that'll give you enough joint space that the nerve won't get pinched. But yeah, that's where that term and the name of my podcast comes from.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, we now know the leading cause of having crooked teeth is because of a compromised airway.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Even like as a child, even having.
Especially as a child.
Okay.
Yeah. When we look at skulls prior to the Industrial Revolution, we see skulls of people that had straight teeth, that had this much space behind each wisdom tooth. Right? And there were no orthodontists around, let alone dentists, right? And they had nice big turbinate space and very small maxillary sinuses and nice broad flat arches, right? And we know they breastfed for 3 to 5 years. We know as soon as the teeth erupted, they gave them the children food to eat, which all that muscle activity developed their mandible. And there was no such thing as processed food.
Right.
You know? So yeah, prior to the Industrial Revolution, we saw way more straight and healthy teeth.
Huh. Now this is interesting because of course, you know, I'm thinking about all the different, even what I've been through, you know, to straighten out some crooked teeth on the bottom of my jaw and going, all this time.
Airway. And then of course, nutrition is a big factor too. Like, I don't know if you've ever read the book by Weston Price, like Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. Thank you. Cause I've actually met naturopaths that haven't, and I find it embarrassing.
Should be the foundation. I mean,
it should be the foundation. It really should be. But for your viewers, the book Nutrition and Physical Degeneration is the best book written on nutrition that will ever exist. Right? he followed indigenous societies all over the world for 9 years, twice.
Wow.
20 years apart. And he found that, you know, those that ate, you know, whole foods, you know, that controlled their diet, that ate fermented food that we now call probiotics with prebiotic fiber in it, you know, could comfortably live to 100. And in that, he found, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he found 14 societies. One was vegetarian. None were vegan. One was vegetarian, and 13 were omnivorous, but they only ate meat no more than 10% of their diet was meat. And they always consumed it with a probiotic. Mm-hmm. And what he found is that even at age 100, they could still chop wood and carry water. Right?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and in fact, one of the famous stories in that book was one of his assistants married an island girl. Right. And, you know, he brought her back, you know, with him to America. She ate, you know, I mean, getting candy when you've never had candy before is like, you know, just like amazing.
Right.
So she ate a high sugary diet when she came here. And what had happened was all her teeth rotted out and she needed dentures and she was emaciated. Right. And when she went back with him to, you know, round trip again, they went back to her island, and there she is, the younger sister, looking like a very old, emaciated woman. And her older sister has this nice, broad, round face, all her teeth, and looks 20 years younger than the younger sister.
Something to be said there.
Indeed.
No, nutrition for sure. And, you know, seems like what, you know, if we kind of bring everything kind of full circle here, it seems like taking care of your sleep, working on dialing in your sleep, dialing in your breath work, your airways, the myotomal exercises. Now, this is what I want to hone in on. This is like exercise for helping your airways, correct?
The myofunctional, yes.
Yes, the myofunctional therapies, in my mind, would be, okay, we're actually working out the airway.
Correct. To help people to breathe. You are.
Better.
You are.
And so perhaps now, and this is something, because forgive me for not knowing about this as I should have, do folks with this therapy, can you turn around, say, a mild to moderate sleep apnea? Working.
Oh yeah, both myofunctional therapy and using a circular wind instrument can reduce your AHI by 50%.
Wow.
So it depends. So for example, if 5 or less is considered within normal limits, and you have 10, mm-hmm. and you cut it from 10 to 5, well, there you go, right? If on the other hand you have 20, and you drop it down to 10, well, you still have enough sleep apnea is going to cause a problem. You're still benefiting by having less events, but still, it's still going to have a detriment.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Now, I think there's something to this. Now, do you think that even if someone with the CPAPs doing this could improve outcomes as well?
So if someone has a CPAP, they can lower their pressure settings.
Okay.
On their machine, which if you ever talk to someone on CPAP, that's a big plus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they're always happy when they get their good scores back from the doc and say, hey, I'm getting good scores. Like, well, if we can improve those scores with a little myofunctional training, then now we're even better there.
Even better.
Exactly. Yeah. Nice. And of course, whole foods diet, things of that nature. So mm-hmm. Dr. Shirazi, where can folks find you in the LA and Conejo areas? I mean, the website, we've got TMJ Conejo or TMJLA.com, correct?
That's the best and fastest way to find us. Yeah. We're also on Facebook. If you want to go type in TMJ and Sleep Therapy Center of Conejo Valley or TMJ and Sleep Therapy Center of Los Angeles, you'll find us there. we're accessible. We have a ton of YouTube videos. We, as you had mentioned before, I did a Google talk for about an hour talking about these exact same things.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, folks. I think you should head over to his website. You can learn a lot more than we were even able to cover today, because I could geek out for probably a couple hours, to be honest, on this topic.
I can tell.
Wanted to kind of touch the surface, so we've got some good basic info. Now, what if someone's listening and say they're in Washington State? Can they come down and do cash pay? How does it work?
Yeah, of course. We have people coming from all over the world, actually. But we have centers. Like, we have a center in Seattle.
Okay.
You know, Dr. Mike Giese's practice is there. We have centers in San Francisco, centers in, you know, San Diego. So we are all over the U.S., all over Canada, all over Australia, New Zealand, England, Bahrain, Dubai. We have over 65 centers. And something like this has never been done before in the private sector.
Yeah.
Where we have basically, if you want to call it a franchise, where we all use the motor reflex test. We all understand the importance of the airway and, you know, help children and adults this way.
So I smile when you say Dr. Mike Giese, because he's who I refer to. He literally has an office across the street from me.
Oh, that's wonderful. He's a character. Mike is a character.
Yes, he is. And so this makes me laugh, because I'm like, how did I not put you and him together? I don't know. But now the universe has aligned for me.
Now maybe you'll have him come on your podcast and talk about it.
I need to get his butt on this podcast, because, yeah, he's literally right across the street from me here in Tacoma.
I love it. He's great.
So I will get him on here. For folks who are local and listening to this, we've got Dr. Mike across from my office. If you're a patient of mine, not very far from there. So we will get that info on the podcast here as well. But if you are wondering more about your jaw, you're wondering, like, what can I do about this? What can I do about my breathing? Maybe I don't have to have a CPAP. Maybe I can work on some breathing work. Hey, you know, head over to Dr. David Shirazi's website at TMJ Conejo or TMJ LA and just get some basic info. We can give you local info if we need to. And his podcast, the Bite, Breathe, and Balance podcast. And that's going to be on all of the regular outlets, correct?
When it goes live, yes, it will be. Absolutely.
And when are you going live, so we can have folks?
Oh my goodness. This year. I'm just going to say this year, 2021.
2021, the podcast is coming. So guys, stay tuned. It's coming so that you can learn more all about TMJ and more. Well, Dr. Shirazi, thank you so much for coming on and letting me geek out with you for a little bit. I certainly enjoyed it and would love to chat more on acupuncture and things of that nature. So thank you very much for your time.
It's been my sincere pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Fix podcast. This podcast was brought to you by Blue Blocks, the blue light blocking glasses. If you follow me on Instagram, you will see me wearing my computer glasses. Those are the Galaxy version. They're fabulous. I have not been having headaches in my office thanks to those awful, awful overhead lights that we have. Those buggers are blah. So anyway, blue light blocking glasses, game changers for your health. Check out them at blueblocks.com.